Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spark Radio Show, filled with strategies, possibilities, actions, resources, and knowledge that may be the spark of a better solution to ignite a positive change in your life. The number to call if you have questions for Melanie or any of our guests is area code 347-215-8390. Now, here's your host, Ms. Melanie.
Hello and welcome to or welcome back to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie, and as always, it is my pleasure. I'm excited to tell you that I was successful in uploading the show for tonight, so please sit back and enjoy my interview with Ms. Cynthia Rogers.
Well, hello and welcome to Spark Radio. I am your host, Ms. Melanie. And as always, it is my pleasure to bring you some exciting sparks that could be the ignition for positive change in your life. Thank you so much for investing the valuable minutes of your life to be with me. I'm excited to bring you a very special guest who has a very interesting and powerful connection between two programs that can make a positive impact in the relationships in your personal and professional life. I'd like to welcome Cynthia Rogers. Hi, Cynthia.
Hello, Ms. Melanie. How are you today?
I am doing very well. And yourself?
I am doing very well and very, very excited to be here and speak with your audience and share some of the things that I know with everyone out there and that's listening to us.
Great. Well, let's start with sharing a little bit about who is Cynthia.
Well, Cynthia Rogers was born and raised in New York, so if you hear this East Coast accent, you'll know where it's coming from. I am president of Rogers & Associates. I have been as president of Rogers & Associates since 1994. Before that and during that time, I have been director of training and development for large corporations such as American Express, Kraft General Foods, WMS Gaming, and in my consulting practice, I have worked for a number of different industries. I don't think that there's an industry that I haven't been in. Companies large, small, for-profit, non-for-profit, and very, very happy to be in all of them. And I felt as if I had gained a wealth of experience from the people that I have met in those companies.
Wow, which leads me to... And I did not know you were from New York, or maybe I did and I'd forgotten, because now you're located in Chicago.
I am in the Chicago area, just north of Chicago.
Okay. And I'm very curious as to what led you to your current work as well as your passion for training and development.
Well, it really started a while ago when I started teaching junior high and high school math and science. I have an undergraduate degree and a master's degree in education, and I taught on the junior high and high school level for a number of years, and then decided I wanted to try and get into the corporate world and do some training there. And I couldn't get a training job, so I started out as a computer programmer because I have a math undergraduate. And I like to tell the story that my managers were so excited that they found a technical person that could speak in full sentences that I was able to pull my two loves together, and that is training with computer programming. So as I went through various companies, my roles had changed, and I expanded from computer training, and I started to pick up what they call some of the soft skills training, the leadership development, the team building, et cetera. And I just kept working my way up and into manager of training and then into the director of training position. And now I would say 95% of the work that Rogers & Associates does is with the softer skills, with the leadership development, with the team building, et cetera. Most recently, I have gotten into behavioral assessments, which is one of the things that we're going to be talking about today, as well as trust, building and maintaining trust in the workplace. And I really, really enjoy working with leaders and helping them understand where they're coming from through the behavioral styles assessments that I use. Because you can't really be a good leader until you know, unless you know what makes you tick. What are your strengths? What are your blind spots? How do you come across? Because you come across, believe it or not, different ways to different people. Because people interpret your behavior based on their experiences and values. So I really enjoy working with leaders and helping them be the best that they can be and helping the people that work for them thrive rather than just merely survive.
And that's a phrase that is near and dear to my heart as well, the thriving beyond just surviving. This is a three-part series that you've agreed to do with me about the models that you're using
Correct.
To connect style and trust. And today we'll focus on the model around style. But before we go there, how did you come to connect the style and the trust models?
I did my work in the styles. I am Myers-Briggs certified, and I'm also certified and have used a number of behavioral assessments with various clients. I've used DISC and most recently Psychogeometrics. And I got my certification in trust because I felt that trust was really something that was lacking in corporate America and I think in life in general. There's really a lot of distrust that's going on. So I became certified in this one program, and I'll talk a little bit more about that during the next segment. I'll give you the details of that. And then I just saw these connections, and I thought, you know, people define trust differently, even though they don't think that they do, and they look for different things in different people as a basis for their trust. So I did a little bit of research, and I started asking people, and I saw other people were telling me the same patterns that I was seeing in why people trust or mistrust others. So it was really fascinating, and I've started to talk about that. I've done a number of these programs in the three parts, doing the behavioral styles first, then the building and maintaining trust segment, and then putting the two together. And I've written a couple of articles, which I believe are accessible through your website, Ms. Melanie.
Yes, they are. And this is a very, very powerful connection, the idea that people trust for different reasons.
Absolutely.
And you, when you know that, especially if you are leading people, managing people, or have relationships with anyone in your life, to understand that how people earn your trust is different than how others might expect you or might look to you to earn their trust. And so understanding that can give you a great increase in your influence and your effectiveness in those relationships. So that's why I'm excited to share this, because I haven't seen it anywhere else, Cynthia. So it's very, very exciting.
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. And you have all heard the adage that people don't necessarily leave companies, they leave managers. And sometimes people can't put a finger on why they're not getting along with this particular manager or why they're not thriving under this particular manager. And many times it's either a style issue or it's a distrust, but they don't necessarily label it as trust. And then when they find out the four elements of trust that I'm going to present to you, they're like, oh, now I get it. Now I understand where this disconnect was. Or sometimes I call it a relation slip.
Oh, I like that. Relation slip.
Relation slip.
So let's get started to help people change the pattern and avoid relation slips.
All right.
In the first segment, we're going to focus on style because our overall theme is when style meets trust. Let's start with the communication behavioral styles model that you use in your article. Tell us about psychogeometrics.
Okay, well, psychogeometrics was created about 30 years ago by Dr. Susan Dellinger. She was the manager of training and development for a large communications firm in the South, and she was teaching, as part of her leadership development program, she was including a fairly complex behavioral styles assessment. And she was being very frustrated because she didn't feel as if her managers and supervisors were quite getting the concept. So being the very creative person that she was, she loves to tell us the story about one day her participants walked into the room and she had a number of shapes up on the wall. And basically she said, go and stand in front of the shapes that resonates with you the most, that you identify with, or that you think describes you the best. And psychogeometrics was born. It's based on shapes. Like all of the other behavioral styles assessments, it's based on Carl Jung's behavioral psychology theories of the four behavioral styles being creator, doer, thinker, and feeler. And psychogeometrics, as well as Carl Jung, both believe that we are attracted to various objects in our environment based on our attitudes and based on our brain functions. So that's pretty much how psychogeometrics was born.
Okay, and I will also mention to listeners, I interviewed Dr. Susan Dellinger, and so if you look into the archives or if you search up Blog Talk, you'll find that interview with her talking about the program as well. And my regular listeners will also know that I am also certified in psychogeometrics, which is how I had the privilege of meeting Cynthia.
That's right.
And so there, you can learn more about the shapes or get some additional information by listening to those additional interviews. Cynthia, let's take a look at each of the styles. Could we take people just through a brief exercise of selecting those shapes? And
yes.
We'll tell them that you can take an online assessment, which includes your style preference, and then you also get information on each of the styles. That's at geometrics is geometrics.com, and that link is in the show notes. And you can enter a discount coupon code. And if you want to be connected with Miss Cynthia, her coupon code is her last name, which is Rogers, R-O-G-E-R-S. And if you would like to be connected with me for follow-up, you could enter my first name, which is Melanie. So that said, for those of you whose style likes to have something more numerical and more structured, there is that online assessment available to you. So today, though, we want to at least have you begin to think about your style. So I will stop talking now. And Cynthia, let's roll.
All right. Well, I want to make this slightly interactive. So what I'd like all of the listeners to do is to either grab a pencil and piece of paper or some kind of writing instrument or the wall or lipstick or whatever, or picture mentally five shapes. And the five shapes are a box. So if you have a pencil and piece of paper, go ahead and draw a box or else picture a box. The next one is a circle. The third one is a squiggly line, followed by a triangle, and the last shape is a rectangle. So once you have all of these things drawn or mentally pictured, what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to rank them from 1 to 5, 1 being the most appealing to you or the one that you think defines you the best, all the way through the number 5, which is what you relate to the least or the shape that you think defines you the least. And I'll give you just about 30 seconds to do that.
I'm hearing the Jeopardy theme in my head.
So am I. All right, got it? Everybody got that? Well, believe it or not, you have just described yourself to the rest of the world. You have solved the mystery of human behavior using those five shapes, you will be able to describe others that are close to you, other people that you relate to, that you deal with, that you communicate with. And believe it or not, this is going to help you solve the mystery of human behavior. So let's go through that. Let's go through them one by one. And again, you are attracted to these because of your environment and your brain function. Each one of the shapes represents your world and what's in it. So let's say you chose as your number one or two the box, the triangle, or the rectangle. That means that you are left-brained. In other words, you tend to be logical in your thinking, very sequential, and you're very task-oriented. Left-brained thinkers make decisions based on information and data. The boxes, and I'll go into each one in a little bit more detail, but the boxes tend to be very organized, very persevering, very analytical, and the boxes tend to like to work alone. The triangles are very decisive, they're very ambitious, competitive, and triangles are the people or the group that usually will take the lead. The rectangles, again, the left brain, are in transition and are experiencing some kind of growth. Now, if you chose the circle or the squiggle as your number one or number two, it means that you're right-brained, which means that you tend to be non-sequential in your thinking, you prefer relationships over tasks, and you tend to make decisions based on gut feelings. In other words, I say you all make decisions one inch above your navels. Circles are known to be friendly, very good listeners, and very good communicators. Squiggles are usually created, very animated in their outward communication with you, and very, very expressive. So, everybody got that? Did you think that I would actually be able to tell you all about you by just meeting, or just by your picking out some shapes? Okay, a couple of things that I'd like you to remember is what I'm going to go through is the strengths of each one of the behavioral styles, their blind spots, and then what you need to do if you're dealing with any one of those behavioral styles. A couple of things.
Cynthia.
Yep.
Before we go through that, what if I'm looking at my shapes and what you just told me, and I'm thinking, and I'm not so sure that's me?
Couple of things. Let's go through the descriptions to see whether or not it's you. If you want a validation, you can always take the online assessment. And I think one of the things that you need to remember is that we are all made up of all of the characteristics that I'm going to talk about. So to some extent or another. So we're all capable of all of these behaviors, but what we tend to do is under stress or in the heat of a moment, we tend to act or react this way.
Okay, that's helpful because I know, at least with my experience with some client groups, there are a few who will say at this point, I just don't think this is me.
Mm-hmm.
And for others, it's very telling.
Right.
So, yeah, stay with it if you don't think it's you yet.
It's a couple of points to remember. What we're going to talk about are descriptions. So we're not prescribing, we're not predicting any behavior. We're describing it. The description is a generalization. And kind of to your point, Melanie, is that suppose we meet someone that we think has box-like characteristics. So a number of things will come to our mind, well, a box is this and this and this and this. However, their behavior might be slightly different. So we need to think collectively, well, what are the overall descriptions of a box or a circle or a triangle? But then when we're meeting with the person, and maybe they may not have these characteristics to the extent that we think that they do, we need to act individually.
Sounds good.
We talked about also that we are the sum total of all of these behaviors, and that will give us the ability to flex or to adapt our style when needed. And we'll do that if we have to fill a style gap. So when we say, for example, we're talking in a situation and we're finding that people are being very analytical and they're not coming up and being strategic, then we have the capability of being more strategic or more triangle-like so we can flex our style to fill that gap. The other thing that you need to remember is that no one shape has it all. So you need to look internally and say, okay, I might be this shape primarily, but I need to flex to this particular shape in order to accommodate the particular situation that I'm in. And all of the shapes and behavioral styles are complementary and supplementary to one another. And I love to say,
I was just going to mention that we will talk specifically about flexing when you're finished going through each of the styles, correct?
Exactly. At the end of each one of the styles, when I describe the strengths of the behavioral shape, the blind spots, and then I'm going to talk about how we need to flex in order to deal with them. The most important thing is to remember, if you remember these four letters, remember the letters Q-tip, Q-T-I-P, and that means quit taking it personally. And by that I mean no one behavioral style is out to get the other. Okay, no one behavioral style was put on this earth to aggravate any of the others. So you see somebody that's doing something, they're acting according to their behavioral style, according to their brain function, and not because they're out there to drive you crazy. And you will, I'll talk about this as we go through the various behavioral styles.
And I will add, Cynthia, since I heard you, when you were presenting Style Meets Trust, and I heard you talking about Q-tip, I do have a Q-tip on my desk that reminds me about quit taking it personally. So you may, that may be valuable for you. Some people put a Q-tip in their pocket. So whatever works, it's a great acronym.
Yes, yes. And when I do leadership development, I talk about putting tools in their toolbox. And one of the tools that people need to put in their toolbox is a Q-tip. All righty, let's get started. And we're going to go alphabetically, just because we are, because we can. We're going to start with the box. And the funny thing is that I go through each one of these behavioral styles. You're going to be putting people's names to these. And if you chose the box or any of the other shape is number one, you're going to be saying, yep, that's me, yep, that's me. So it's kind of fun. This is a chance for us to be introspective and kind of laugh with each other. Anyway, so boxes. Boxes are the hard workers. They will get things done because they are left brain and very task-oriented. They are organized. They are structured. They are detail-oriented. And they are very analytical. They are data. They make their decisions based on data. They're persevering. So if you want something done, give it to a box because they will do the task from start until finish. They think that a clean desk is the same thing as a healthy mind. They love an empty out box, which means that all of their jobs have been done. And boxes, because they are so analytical, they will think before they talk. So I'm sure that you all have names, people in your life that are boxed. So let's talk a little bit about their blind spots. Because they are so detail-oriented and because they're so heavy into thinking, sometimes they'll get stuck on the little thing, and they tend to live for the details. The other blind spot box is sometimes they're too tactical, and they have a feeling that no one can do it better than I can do it. Boxes will live by the rules. Sometimes they make up their own rules to live by, but they're always by the rules and do things this way and this sequence, etc. And I think I mentioned to you all before that boxes tend to work alone. The biggest blind spot of a box is that because of the fact that they're so task-focused, that sometimes that gets in the way of building relationships. And that's the biggest relation slip that boxes can have with your circles and with your squiggles, is that they're so task-oriented that they kind of forget about the people side of things. So let's talk about what they need. So if we're working with a box, if we're married to a box, if we have a box as a friend, or if we have a box on our staff, boxes thrive under routine. Because they're so analytical, because they think before they talk, they're not auditory. They tend not to be auditory people. So a box works best if you give them something in writing. So, for example, if you're going to invite them to a meeting, send them the agenda. If they need to think about something, or if they need to come prepared with questions, or if you're going to have a discussion, send them the questions, send them the agenda beforehand so they can analyze, they can gather all of their data, and they can come feeling very, very prepared for the meeting. Give them very clear instructions, give them data, data, and more data. It's also very important for a box for you to be prompt. So if you're calling a meeting for 10 o'clock, make sure that meeting starts at 10 o'clock. Because boxes are so detail-oriented and so analytical, they tend not to like surprises. Now, you can surprise them, but give them a little bit of warning, saying that things might change, etc. And the other thing that boxes really like is they prefer to work alone. So they're the highest number of people in a team that they like is one, and that's themselves. So smaller group settings they are the most comfortable with. So that takes us now to the circle. So we went from the left brain and to the right brain. The circles are friendly, they're nurturing, they're rapport builders, they're the stabilizer, they're the peacemaker, they're the conflict avoider. It's interesting because when I meet a group of people and I do this exercise with them where they have to identify the shapes, I'll go to a group of circles and I'll say, tell me what it is about the circle that you like, that you can relate to. And they'll say, I like it because it's got no sharp edges. And I immediately say to them, that means that you're a conflict avoider. And they're like, how did you know? So they are the conflict avoider. They are the peacemaker. They are very cooperative. They're a very, very good team player, good listeners, good communicators, and kind of sort of like the box. They like the status quo. We said that boxes don't like change. Circles like the status quo because they feel comfortable with it. Now, circles, you've heard the expression that your strength can be your weakness, the same thing with circle as well as with all of these behavioral styles. Unlike the box, where they're so high focused on the task that the relationship gets in the way, it's just the opposite with the circles. They are so relationship focused that sometimes what happens is they forget the task they need to have accomplished. Blind spots of the circle, and I see this a lot in business owners because I do a lot of work with small business owners, and we talk about behavioral styles and what kind of a business owner you are. Circles, because they're so generous and they want to please, they will very often give away the farm. So they'll say to their customers, yeah, sure, you can have it at that discounted price, or I'll give you a few more things. So they want to please, and they want to win you over. The other thing that happens very often in the business world with a circle is because they're so nurturing and they're so willing to please is that they may not be taken seriously in a business setting. They're usually smiling. They're usually comforting. One of the ways that you can recognize a circle is the very warm and friendly handshake. And to your task-oriented folks, the circle may not be taken seriously. The other thing that the other blind spot of circles is because they want to win over people is that they may not make a decision as quickly or come to a decision as quickly as some of the other behavioral styles because they always strive for consensus. And also their need for approval gets in the way. So what do you do when you're dealing with a circle in the business world or in your personal world? You need to show them personal interest. You need to start conversations by saying, hi, how are you? How was your weekend? And let them talk a little bit about that. They need to get the feeling that you are connected and you care about them. They need absolute honesty. They love it if you discuss their problems. They like the boxes, like the smaller groups. Boxes like groups of one, namely themselves. Circles, even though they are the friendly circle, they like smaller groups. They like comfort. They like a very home-like and a very safe atmosphere, and they're looking for validation and approval. So this brings us to the squiggle, which is our other right side relationship-based. They're very, very creative. They're very, very intuitive. They are very, very, very energetic and expressive, very animated. You always know what's going on in a circle's mind. I'm sorry, in a squiggle's mind, because they talk to think. Where the box thinks before they talk, and their talking process goes on in their mind, the squiggles will talk out in front of them. They're witty. They move fast. They're animated. They talk fast. They're very eager to share ideas. Unlike the boxes, they do not want anything to do with details. They are not interested in the details. They're always coming up with new ideas and new ways of doing things. I remember I had a squiggle that was on my staff, and she would always come to a meeting 5 minutes late, always carrying an armful of projects, and her entrance would be fairly dramatic. She would drop the things that she would have in her arms, and she would say, "I just found the greatest thing since sliced bread." And it was really kind of funny to listen to her. So you always get enthusiasm from a squiggle. Because of their high energy level, because of animation, they tend to be very easily bored. Because of their lack of interest in details, they tend not to be a very strong implementer. They are right-brained. They have a gut feel to them. They make decisions 1 inch above their navel. Something has to feel good to them. They place a lot of emphasis on values. So they will work with people that have the same values that they do and the same ethics. So with all this being said, what do you need to do? How do you need to work with them or flex to them? You need to be excited. You need to share their excitement. You need to give them the big picture, because remember, squiggles are not into details. You need to reward their creativity, and squiggles hate silence. So you need to continually feed their energy. They're quite fun to have around. The boxes, they can be quite tiring. Okay, that leads us to the triangle. Okay, and it's very
Cynthia, before I go to the triangle, I'm just taking notes.
Okay.
What was the relation slip per squiggle?
The relation slip more is with the box. So you've got your box is very, very analytical, very, very detail-oriented, and you have your squiggle who's relationship-oriented and very not into details. So the two of them can have a relation slip when they're working together. You've got your animated squiggle that's trying to draw life out of your very quiet, inward-focused box. So your squiggle is kind of knocking on their head and saying, "Is anybody in there?" And on the other hand, your box is looking at your squiggle. You have squiggle very animated. Your box is very quiet, and the box is saying, "Would you just shut up and get your work done?" So it's really a lot of fun to watch the two of them together, and they really can be frustrating for one another until they realize how to deal with the other, and that this is the way each one of them is wired. And it's amazing because your squiggle, they really do make a good pair, because your squiggle will come up with all of these wonderful ideas and your box implements it. Your box will say, "This is how much it's going to cost. This is how many people it's going to take to do this. Here's our timeline." So they really do balance each other out very, very well.
Thank you.
Okay, triangle. The triangle, and it's interesting because when I do this exercise with people and I say, okay, go stand in front of the shape that describes you the most, when I talk to triangles and I say, "Tell me, what is it about the triangle that attracted you or that thinks describes you?" they always say, "I like this, I can relate to this because I find direction from it." And that's exactly what triangles do, is they take the lead. They point people and point people toward where they want to go. Triangles are very, very goal-oriented. They're leaders, they're implementers, they're strategic, they see the big picture, they're focused, they're ambition, all of the qualities that people look for in leaders. They can be very political, and I'm not saying that's a good thing or not a good thing. Oh, that's one of the other things that I talk about, is when I'm talking about each one of these descriptions, I'm not saying that any one of these are good. I'm not saying that any one of these are not good. I'm saying that this is, it's just what they are. So not good, not good, just is. You recognize triangles because they have a very powerful handshake. They have a power voice. Triangles can come across as being very strong in their opinions. Triangles tend to have, now triangles we said are left brain, so they're very task oriented. They tend to have few friends, but they have a lot of associates. Triangles are very good delegators. We said that they're strategic, they are goal oriented, they like to get things done. They don't necessarily like to do things themselves like the box does. They like to take charge. They like to have many projects going and pointing all the projects in the direction of the goal. They're good delegators. They do hold you to high standards. Let's talk about some of the blind spots or where the strengths of a triangle can actually be their blind spots. Like the box, the task focus often gets in the way of building the relationship. The triangles are your strategists, and they can be so overly strategic that they lose sight of the tactical. So they've got the goal in mind, but they lose sight about all the things that they have to do to get something done. So this is where the triangle and the box work together very well, because you have your strategist with their eye on the bottom line, and you have your tactical person who's going to get them there. The other blind spot of a triangle can be that because they're so focused on getting the work done, is that they can come across as being cold, and they can come across as being very demanding. It's interesting, in one of my discussions with people, because I talk to employees, and we talk about managers and leadership styles, and we say, okay, now what do you think the leadership style of your manager is or your leader is, and how can you flex to them? And one of the pet peeves of someone was, well, you know, my boss, I think he's a triangle, and he comes into the office and he never says hello in the morning. And I said, you know, again, quit taking it personally. That's the way triangles are. They're so focused on getting the task done that they kind of forget the relationship. So let's talk about what you need to do in order to work with a triangle. You need to be prepared. You need to be prepared. And you need to talk to them in headlines only. And if they want the detail, then you need to have the detail there. Show deference. Speak to them firmly and with confidence. Show confidence. Expect some kind of emotional detachment from them. I mentioned to you before about they may not say hello. And again, don't take it personally. But make sure that you have the backup that you need. They look for competence. They look for people the ability to get the job done. Very common relation slip is between the triangle and the circle. And think about where they are. Your triangle, task-oriented, outward. They're the other ones like the squiggles that talk to think. Very, very strategic. And they're working with your circles that tend to be the peacemaker, et cetera. So what happens is the triangle can often look at the circle as not a good leader because they're too soft. And the other way is the circle may look at the triangle as being too abrasive. So it's really an interesting dynamic that can go on between the two. So that leads us to our very last behavioral style, and that's the style of the rectangle. And Dr. Dellinger is the only one, other than Myers-Briggs, that has 16 combinations of behavioral styles. He's the only one that has 5 behavioral styles as opposed to 4. And she put the rectangle in, from what I understand, for 2 reasons. One is that this is the shape that we use, or the behavioral style that we use to flex to the others. And by flexing, I mean is how do you put aside temporarily your predominant behavioral style, your comfort zone, to complement and supplement the behavioral style of the others. So you do that through the rectangle. The other way that she uses the rectangle is people will often relate to the rectangle. So, for example, if I say, in the opening activity, I said, put it from 1 to 5, the one that the behavioral style or the shape that identifies you the most and what identifies you the least, people will have as a rectangle the number 1 or 2 if they're going through some kind of change. A job change, they just moved, maybe there's uncertainty in their organization. And when I tell that to people who pick the rectangle as number 1 or number 2, I'll ask them, I say, you're going through change, aren't you? And they just are absolutely amazed. They're like, how did you know? So the rectangle can be a temporary stage that once you get through this change, you will go back to whatever your predominant style is. I had an instance once where a participant in one of my lectures stood in front of the rectangle. She was the only one there, and she felt very uncomfortable. So what she did is I had the picture of a rectangle drawn, and it was the long side on the horizontal. So she took a marker, and she put two vertical lines, and she said, look at this. I can also be a box. And then she took the marker, and she put a diagonal line. She says, I could also be a triangle. And that was exactly the thought process behind the rectangle, is that they're searching, they're growing, they're in transition. They might come across as being confused and inconsistent because there's stuff going on in their world. One of the blind spots of a rectangle is that because you don't know what you are, because you're going through some change, your teammates may have a hard time flexing to you. So what do you do? How do you deal with your rectangle? You need to support them. You need to give them space for growth. You need to treat them with patience. And you need to understand what they're going through. That's pretty much it. Melanie, any questions for me?
So you said the blind spot for the rectangle was that because they're uncertain, they can be unpredictable, so it's hard for others to communicate, connect, or work with them. Did you talk about a relationship for rectangles?
I didn't, but I can. Basically, a relationship, a rectangle can have a relation slip or with any of the other behavioral styles because of the fact that they're going through such a hard time right now and that they could almost take on any persona. This is rare. Most of the time, the rectangle is used for us to flex through to the other behavioral styles when we're dealing with another behavioral style and when we need to adapt the other behavioral style. One of the things I want to make sure people understand about flexing is we're not asking you to change. We're not asking you to change what you are because you can't. You're physically wired. And it's interesting because there are a number of theories about behavior. Years and years and years ago, people said you are what you are genetically. You're hardwired. That was it. And then after that, the second theory was, well, it's not only how we're hardwired, but it's how we're raised. So it was this whole idea of nature and nurture. The most common theory now is the fact that we're saying that behavior is a choice. So we need to take what we know about ourselves, what's most comfortable for us, look at the other person, and then adapt our behaviors temporarily when we're dealing with that particular person. So the box needs to think through things a little bit quicker, come to a decision quicker, be a little bit more animated when they're dealing with a squiggle. A box needs to show competence and when they're dealing with a triangle because that's what a triangle looks for. A box needs to show a little bit more of the relationship side when they're dealing with a circle. So this is what we're talking about when we're talking about flexing.
And I think, too, with the concept of flexing, and I laugh because triangles can have challenges because they love to say it's my way or the highway, and you all just need to communicate with me my way. And flexing gives you a greater likelihood of a win-win communication, and it takes a couple things. It takes some pre-planning to think about the style of the person or the people on the team you'll be communicating with, as well as the energy and the conscious choice, as you said, about behavior, to communicate in a way that speaks through their style and their strengths.
Absolutely.
And if we all do that, we're going to meet somewhere in the middle.
Absolutely. And the funny, in addition to that, one of the questions I get asked a lot is, who flexes first? And I kind of laugh when they say that to me because I said, what is this, a staring contest and who blinks first? I say to them, you now have the knowledge. You know how you are wired. You know how you come across. You know what your preferences are. It's now your responsibility to use the tool that I just gave you and to find out or attempt to find out what the style is of the other person, and you flex first. I said, and what happens is the whole thing is so subconscious and unconscious, and it's so powerful in the end. And you get to the end point, you get to the end result a lot quicker because all of this dial stuff is no longer in the way.
And that's so, so true. And in light of what you just said about who flexes first, and the best answer is, you now have the knowledge, and anyone can go first, including you. And with triangles, when they see the strategic benefits of enhanced communication, yes, they can flex.
Yes, absolutely.
And so be careful. Anytime you have a model, it's not an excuse for behavior.
Oh,
it is a tool to improve your communication and to begin to make, as you said, that conscious choice around how you communicate.
Absolutely.
Okay, as we're winding down, Ms. Cynthia, flexing, and you did hint at it initially, as you're learning the tool and learning to use the system, it may take conscious thoughts in terms of how and when to flex. As you begin to use it, just like any new skill, you can become unconsciously competent at it. Would you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Awesome.
And it's kind of fun. Now that I know it comes second nature to me. So I assess, I listen to the words that people use, I listen to the intonation, and I pick up cues. If meeting them in person, I look at their environment, and see what their environment is like. And it's almost a little game or a challenge for me to assess what they are and then to flex my behavior to match theirs. And it's so rewarding in the end because now you have a relationship that is building and a relationship that is thriving. And don't think that this can only be used in your business life. This can be used in personal life also.
Oh, absolutely. Especially when, and I had a woman in a seminar I did at a conference, and she stayed after to talk to me, and she said she was really concerned because her new marriage, she said that she didn't think was working out after about 5-6 months. And what had happened was that they fell into the day-to-dayness of their relationship. Their styles emerged full force.
Right.
And their full force style differences were a triangle and a squiggle. Both of which are very strong-minded.
Yes.
And they approach and process information very, very differently.
Right.
And so by using this communication model and realizing I didn't have your Q-tip tool at that point, that it wasn't personal. It was just the way that people were approaching the world, to take that back. And I never did hear how that worked for her, but she felt very hopeful after having done this that they could work through their differences in their relationship.
Yeah. One of the things, to continue the conversation by saying this doesn't only work for your professional world, but you, as you said, in your personal world, I love to take this into different businesses and to show people, for example, I mentioned before that I do a lot of work with small business owners. And I will sit them in a group through chambers of commerce, et cetera, and I'll sit with them in a group and I'll say, what's eating you away at your business? Why are you not doing the way you want to do? And some of them will say, "Why?" And I end up spending so much time on the phone with my clients or so bogged down with paperwork cues as to what they are. The people that are spending a lot of time with their customers, those are the circles. But they need to pull back from the relationship or else they'll say, I'm losing money. Well, why are you losing money? Well, I'm giving away the store. So it's interesting how people approach. I also gave the speech to a group of realtors. And I said, you need to figure out your potential buyer. And here you have a piece of property. And if you're selling to triangles, you're going to point out the Viking stove, the granite countertops, the best school district, the this, the that. If you're selling this piece of property to a circle, look at this family room. You can have wonderful family parties here. So you talk about all the creature comforts of the property. Same piece of property, looking at it through the eyes of the potential buyer.
And that is so helpful for small business owners who have gone from, they have something they love to do, and then they take it into business, and there are so many facets of business that they will excel usually within their style strengths and struggle in the area that is their opposite style, so to speak, their area of weakness.
Yeah, and customer service, you're on the phone with someone. If you're on a hotline, run an 800 number, you're on the phone with someone, and they're saying to you, please send it to me in writing. Okay, they're detail-oriented. Most likely they are a box because they need the data, they need the backup.
Oh, absolutely. So if you're listening to this and you're intrigued by the model, again, you can go to psychogeometrics.com and take the assessment, and the discount coupon code saves you about 10%. The assessment is $10.95 for not only your results on the assessment, you also get the additional information and more than what Cynthia has told you here today, and you can learn some more. That way, you can also connect with Cynthia or with me. Cynthia, what is the best way for people to connect with you if they have questions or they're interested in having you do a seminar on style, trust, or when style meets trust?
The best thing to do is to send me an email. I will be doing a lot of traveling. My email address is crogersassoc@aol.com. So the best thing to do would be to send me an email first, and then I'll get back to you, hopefully within 24 hours of your email, to set up a time for us to connect.
I think you brought up a very important point, too, especially for those styles that want immediate response. The acknowledgement that, yes, when we travel, we don't always get back as quickly as we might like because of the speaking and training that we do. And okay. I do want to, for those of you who are listening and don't see necessarily the show notes because you downloaded the MP3, which many of my listeners do, crogersassoc@aol.com, then it's spelled crogersassoc@aol.com. And Cynthia then can get back to you. Cynthia, as our time is, as I said, winding down, let me hop over and get to the final couple questions. Because Cynthia was kind enough to record this, if you were listening to us live, we're not able to connect directly, please contact Cynthia. In our last couple minutes, Cynthia, what are one or two key messages you would want listeners to take away about style?
We all have it. We all have style. We all have different styles. We all have same styles. And now that you have the tool in your behavioral toolbox, so to speak, now that you have the Q-tip, take it and run with it. And keep in mind that no one is out to get us.
That is very, very true. I love quit taking it personally. We just have different ways that we're wired and different ways of receiving information and communicating in the world. And we can get to the same result. We'll just do it in a very unique and diverse way. And I love the line that Dr. Susan uses, that inner diversity is our strength. And that really is true.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, Cynthia, it has been a pleasure, and I'm so looking forward to sharing the next two parts of our series. If people are interested in talking with you, that we will have an interview live on August 10th. And so we invite you to connect then. Our next segment is about trust. We've got about 3 minutes, Cynthia. What would you say to pique people's interest in the next segment about trust?
I think trust is one of those words that means different things to different people, but the knee-jerk reaction of the definition of trust is people doing what they say they're going to do. And trust has many, many more dimensions than that. I have found a four-element model that I call the ABCDs of trust, which is exactly, and ABCD stands for the four elements of trust. So it's very elementary, but so, so powerful. Elementary and easy to remember, just like the styles. When Dr. Dellinger came up with the shapes, I find that they're very intuitive. The four elements of trust, the ABCD, is also very, very intuitive.
Oh, I'm intrigued. I'm looking forward to conducting the next interview, which will also be recorded due to Cynthia's schedule. So do come back, check out the show notes, and as always, we thank you so much for being here. Cynthia, thank you so much for a very informative hour.
Thank you all for listening, for taking the time to listen, and I look forward to speaking with each and every one of you. It's been my pleasure.
Until next time, take action on something that you heard that could be a spark for a positive change in your life to create the relationship success, professionally and personally, that you desire and deserve. Until next time, stay safe.
Thank you for listening to Spark Radio with Ms. Melanie. Please share this show link with those you believe would enjoy and benefit from listening. We invite you to join us for upcoming shows with special guests and more sparks. May a spark you heard ignite a positive change in your life. Good day.